As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Amy McCullough, obviously of the Athletic. We are here with David O'Brien and Fabian Ardaya talking about the National League Championship Series, where the Dodgers just had a dramatic comeback victory over the Braves, 6-5, to make it a 2-1 series advantage for Atlanta, which, you know, theoretically, right, favors the Braves.
Theoretically.
But ostensibly.
Ostensibly.
I'm wondering, have you ever covered a series like this?
I was looking back through history, trying to find when the Dodgers blew a 2-0 series lead in the NLCS.
The Braves blew a 2-0 series.
Oh, the Braves, I'm sorry. I found one relatively recently. Now, I mean, you know, the specter of that's going to loom whether the Braves admit it or not. And this is almost an entirely different Braves team. Yeah. As far as how they're built and how much deeper they are and their attitude and all that. But still, there are enough guys that were here last year that can't help but think about that, and especially with the bullpen game looming tomorrow, which is the worst possible timing for the Braves to have a bullpen game.
So, Fabian, I'll get to you in a sec, because Brian Snicker after the game said there's not going to be any carryover. And look, I'm just going to use late night language. That's bullshit.
I mean, yeah, what else is he going to say?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but like, there has to be some sort of psychic aftershock of a game like this, I think. Especially like when you're starting a bullpen game. You can't even say like momentum is based on the next day's starting pitcher. They don't know who tomorrow's starting pitcher is.
If they were starting Max Fried tomorrow, I think they would feel entirely different.
Right.
But this is kind of they haven't pitched many bullpen games this year. They've had a relative amount of success, but most of those were not facing the Dodgers in game 4 of the NLCS. And they're doing it with having pitched Luke Jackson –
right.
And Tyler Matzek, arguably their best two relievers, they've pitched him in every game so far in this LCS. And Snit had said before the game that he wanted to give a couple of guys a day off, or did he say that after the game? But those are the two guys he's talking about.
Right.
If you take them out of the mix in a bullpen game,
there's
no chance in hell the Braves are going to win a bullpen game. I'm sorry, I'll eat my words if they do. But without those two guys in a bullpen game, unless you get a remarkable, unexpected performance from, like, Enoa, who at the start of the year looked like could have been the guy to go five or six innings, or Smiley, who also had a good stretch in the early of the year. But neither of them has pitched in the last month and a half to 2 months where you would think that they could go more than two innings.
For sure. So, Fabian, I'm curious, in the sixth or seventh inning, what were you thinking you were going to be doing next week?
I was definitely looking at that reservation I have for Atlanta, like looking at how long I have to cancel it before it starts. But yeah, like, it was sort of looking like that, like where Dave Roberts was talking about. They were dead in the water. Yeah. Like, he admitted that they felt like they were dead in the water.
Pretty open about that.
Which is, I mean, obviously, like, you know, it's not often you hear a manager say that, but like, you could see it. You could see it. The 3-run deficit, but it felt like a lot more. The offense just hasn't gotten going really this whole postseason. Like, they've had a couple of games here and there, but they just have not gotten going. And then all of a sudden, just in the eighth inning, it seems like they've had a knack of finding these random late bursts when they need to. It's been basically since the All-Star break that it's been at this point, just because the offense has been kind of scuffling or inconsistent. They keep finding them, and obviously, it seems like it always seems to find Cody Bellinger for some reason this October. And he has had, obviously, the season that he's had, the miserable year he's had, but this October has been remarkable.
Can we talk about the pitch that he hit? I mean, my God. I felt almost bad for Luke Jackson because it wasn't a bad pitch. Right. I mean, you could argue that maybe you don't throw a fastball in 1-2 regardless of where it's located. But still, he's trying to finish the guy off and let's go to the next guy because he's throwing quite a few pitches.
And Bellinger also hasn't hit velocity all year. That was the whole thing. You wrote about this in Game 5 against the Giants. Why was Camilo Duvall going slider, slider, slider when this guy can't catch up to velocity? Well, now, like, it, you know, that at bat was so interesting because, you know, he gets it 1-1, and Jackson throws just center cut 96 right down the middle, and Bellinger completely misses him. Like, it's not even close, just on the complete wrong swing path. He's swinging out his ass. And I was upstairs, and I saw that pitch, and I was like, huh, that was weird. And then he throws a fastball 95 up and away, and he just kind of touches it, and it lands in the right center bleachers. It was similar to he hit a homer like that in Game 5 of the 2017 World Series against the Astros. We're just like, this man is a freak. Like, this man is a freak of nature. Yeah. And it takes, you know, a special amount of talent to be as bad as he was this year and still be capable of doing stuff like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's doing it on a surgically repaired right shoulder. Yeah. He's doing it with fractured ribs.
He's got a broken rib, right?
Yeah, and he's doing it like where he was able to sort of change his swing mid-season and then mid-at-bat sort of shorten up even more on that shortened up swing. And to still have that ability to not just get to that ball, but to be able to drive it out the way that he did, it's remarkable. It sort of shows, obviously, why the Dodgers still believe in him. He's still a great defender.
Yeah.
And that's why he got so many opportunities in a season where, I mean, you're not going to give 400 plate appearances to a guy who's hitting 160.
Right. On a good team, you have to be pretty terrible to have that OPS to get 400 plate appearances.
Yeah. Some of these guys, though, like you see some of these old guys you see, like Chipper was like this at the end of his career, like Albert now, they take a swing that has had no right to hit it out, but they can backspin a ball, unlike a lot of these young guys who might have tons more strength and back speed, but they can still get that one that you're just like, how did that go out? But I think Luke, looking back, probably didn't want to try to bury a slider because there's two guys on base, and he didn't want to move it up. So he's probably thinking, get this guy out of the way. Let's get this thing over with.
Right, and he's probably thinking he's shortening up with two strikes. He's not going to, he's not going to hurt me with this pitch. Would there have been any merit to go to Will Smith there?
Yeah, but he hasn't been a multi-inning guy all year. You could have gone there and finished him, but then he's probably looking ahead. He's assuming that Luke's going to get out of this because Luke has been really good at inducing a ground ball and getting out of that thing with a double play. And if they weren't shifted, but the shifts have helped them all year, but if they weren't shifted, they does get a double play there.
It's tough because
that's irrelevant. Because they are shifting. They do all shift on those balls.
Right. I guess it feels like Brian Snicker is in a bit of a pickle in that spot. And not that, like, look, Bellinger hit a ridiculous pitch out, so I don't think it's too much Snicker's fault, but you know, there were two hits to get on before there, and I guess what I want, I feel like as you mentioned, right, their two best guys are Matzik and what's the fellow's name? I forget it already.
Matzik and Luke are the Matzik best guys.
Yeah, right.
And Will Smith.
And Will Smith.
Really well lately,
so it's like, he's sort of, in that spot, it's tough to go to Smith.
And he'd already used Minter.
And he'd already Minter, yeah. But it's tough to go to Smith and then, because you're really worried about Seager and Betts. So you kind of, like, you're asking him to get at least six outs or five outs, that's, I don't know, it's tough. Because
if he's done at any point during the year, you'd say, but he has no idea how he would react to that because he just hasn't done it.
Right. So, and that kind of gets into, just the lack of weapons out of the bullpen.
Yeah, because they are really good four deep now. Minter's pitched really well lately, so you can go four deep. But when you get past four with them, so if your starter doesn't give you, they still were going to pull it off tonight somehow after Charlie's first inning. And he went five innings. But if you've got to go more than three deep in the pen, you really are four deep. You really are. This ain't like the Dodgers who pitch eight, nine guys in a game.
They got saved by that. They honestly did. The fact that Alex Facio was able to come in that fourth inning where everything fell apart for the Dodgers in that inning and was able to get out of it, keep it at a two-run deficit. Obviously, it went up to three runs. But to sort of go to the – they went to the bottom of the barrel. They're bullpen guys. They went to Tony Gonsolin was the winning pitcher in this game.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
So like they went to that and they were still able to like stay in that game and at least kept it within striking distance.
But they're like sixth or seventh relievers are pumping like 99 miles an hour. You know, it's like, come on, man.
That's the difference with this Dodgers team than other ones I've covered before is like you know, those that 4-7-8 spot in the bullpen, those guys are dudes. Like, you know, Alex Vesia is like a dude.
Yeah,
you know?
Even like Evan Phillips, like this is the first time he's been on the postseason roster. He's a guy they picked up off waivers. He throws a ridiculous slider, and he's able to go multiple innings. And he's someone that they've taken a chance on. They haven't thrown him that much, but he's been pretty effective whenever he's been out there.
I'm starting to see how the Dodgers won 106 games.
Yeah.
I'm starting to figure it out.
Yeah.
So, I know the bullpen was their huge advantage coming into the series. It just hadn't come into play yet.
Right. Well, it's just and it should be. And the bullpen's actually pitched really well.
Yeah.
It's just their offense has been completely asleep.
Yeah.
And so in the Braves bullpen, they'll pitch really well.
Right.
They hadn't had to go that
deep. They mashed them, but now it's like, okay, they're going to get into the deep water where the Dodgers have gotten looks at all those guys. And so okay, Braves have a bullpen game tomorrow.
Yeah.
What can Julio Urias offer the Dodgers tomorrow? What has he got?
I think realistically, you're looking at two times through the order, probably. He's probably that type of guy. Like, that's sort of how they've treated him since September rolled around. Obviously, he's shown the ability of when he's going, he'd probably go a third time through. He's someone that they might trust to go 100 pitches. But I think realistically, you're looking at that. They say he shouldn't have any ill effects from his relief outing in Game 2. Obviously, we'll see how he looks. Obviously, we saw Max Scherzer look in Game 2 after his relief outing in the DS. But that's sort of what you're looking at, and you're looking at, obviously, this is a bullpen that has had a lot of guys get used a lot, but no one's necessarily been burned.
Right.
They've only had two guys now go over 20 pitches in an outing all postseason, so they have guys who are relatively fresh.
Right.
And Blake Treinen didn't get pitched
that's
yet, so he's someone who, if you have a lead, you have someone you very much trust.
Probably
lately.
Have six outs from Treinen.
Six outs from Treinen, and you also have Bruce Dark Gratterall, who they stayed away from today.
Right.
God damn, those two guys, man, they're ridiculous. And Gratterall comes in throwing with short arm and like no legs and throwing 102.
They
like,
had 103 basically doing that
man.
Against the Giants. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like, when you're around a team every day, I think you tend to see their flaws more than their strengths.
Right. Yes.
And so I'm curious, we can do this both ways, actually. When you watch the Dodgers, right, like what jumps out to you?
Just the stuff on their bullpen. Just one after another guys coming in pumping. I mean, there's just no let up.
Yeah.
Most teams, you want to get to their bullpen, or at least you did back in the day. You don't want to get to these guys' bullpen, man.
Right.
I mean, unless, you know, Scherzer's pitching or, you know, with the Buehler, maybe you do. But it's like it's not – I mean, Buehler leaves the game, and they're just coming throwing harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have the variety of pitches, but they have filthy stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty impressive. And then, you know, the depth of the lineup, we haven't seen it in this postseason, but I know it's a really good lineup.
Right.
I mean, you got,
The 2019 MVP is batting seventh.
And
what stands out to you about the lineup?
Well, one is, like, I wish I could see what this team looked like with Ronald Acuna Jr. and Mike Soroka. Like, but this is a lot more talented team than 88 wins would suggest. I think that's very clear, especially with who they added since the trade deadline. They have a lot of guys who maybe aren't going to necessarily like get on base all the time, but they can scare you for sure. Like to be able to put together a big swing, someone like a Jock Peterson, obviously the Dodger fans know really well, and even obviously Freddie Freeman, who it took until today to really get emerged in this series. He's someone that anytime you have a former MVP in the lineup, I think that's going to scare you a little bit. And Ozzie Albies is a great player. They have a lot of really talented players, and the rotation. At least the top three who the Dodgers have seen so far are all guys who have some impressive qualities. I mean, Charlie Morton obviously has done it in the postseason. Max Fried has done it. Ian Anderson had that great turn to the postseason last year. Like, this is a really talented team, especially for a team that only won 88 games.
And they're playing without Soler, who was doing great work in the leadoff spot. I mean, a 6'5 guy comes up there looking like Stanton leading off. He started several games with a leadoff homer, had great eye, drew a lot of walks. So he was playing great before he got the COVID thing. But, you know, everybody keeps saying if they still had Acuna. But the thing is, even though he's the best player on the team, they would not have two of them. Because they went out and traded for four guys.
They
wouldn't have traded for more than maybe two, probably one.
Right.
They needed a left fielder because of Ozuna. So they probably would have gotten Duvall. Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't have got Eddie Rosario, Soler, or Jock.
Yeah.
Because they got Jock right after the All-Star break only because Acuña had just gotten hurt.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to say how good they would be if they had Acuña because it's not like he would just added him to this team that they have. And he played every day. They're platooning guys, moving guys around now and all that.
But they have, but they, what they do have a lineup that doesn't have a dead spot in it.
Right, like, they don't.
And that is a, that's a huge value.
Dansby Swanson's hitting eighth.
Right, and he's hitting eighth. He had a perfectly fine season.
He's 27
like, he's a league average hitter by OPS plus. He's got power. You know, Darnot, I know, didn't have the year that, you know, he had in the past, but he, like, so that makes it so that getting through that lineup, and I think that has been one of the things, not just the, you know, there's been, like, so I was actually interested in coming in when it looked like it was going to be the Atlanta up 3-0, right? The discourse nationally, right, is like Dodgers are screwing up. And I think there's some of that to is true. Like, certainly, like, they've blown opportunities and, you know, they mismanaged game two. But as you pointed out, Fabian, like, the Atlanta lineup is a lot better, I think, than people realize. And I would be curious to know, like, how much that really contributed to how Scherzer looked in game two, rather than just, you know, him being tired. Like, yeah, he had some dead arm, but they also made him work. Like, they punished him for mistakes. That definitely affected Buehler. And I think that, you know, Atlanta, as you said, is a much better than an 88-win team, and it's interesting. It would have, like, if Atlanta had won this in five, which is still possible, but, like, if they, you know, kept the way they were going, it would have been sort of like, wow, the Dodgers blew this incredible opportunity. Yeah. But Braves are a good team, man. Like,
yeah, well,
in
the last 2 months of the season, they played over 600 balls. So.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even mention Austin Riley sort of sitting there. Like, all kinds of guys.
Andy
Beek
added it. I mean,
you're sort of looking at it. I think you sort of, like, when you mentioned Andy, it's more noticeable with how Buehler looked, I think, than Scherzer, because I think even Scherzer was sort of, like, battling himself, you sort of sense, especially at the end.
That's fair.
But, like,
Buehler
even
was
but,
weird.
Yeah, but even Scherzer, like, he was handling that lineup relatively well, and all of a sudden, like, you leave one pitch to Jock, and all of a sudden you're looking at a tie game. And that's just sort of what this lineup can do to you, is sort of they can wait till the right moment and then be aggressive and make that strike.
And they faced him so many times with the Nationals, so they're not, he didn't have that mystique with the Braves that he has with
a lot
of teams. And they faced him a lot of times in games that didn't matter at all in June, you know. And so, I mean, I think Freddie's faced him more than any other hitter in his career.
I think that's right. So what's the hope for Braves fans after they deal with the?
I mean, the hope is that the bullpen surpasses expectations like they have during the postseason. But like I said, without pitching Matzik and Luke, I think he probably got to pitch one of those guys. Yeah, Matzik wants to pitch every day, so I mean, he didn't show any fatigue.
Right,
Luke did. Luke hit a guy yet the last game, and then gives up, you know, four hits by recording one out. So I think you rest Luke, but if you pitch Matzik, gives you a chance, and you go a little longer with Matt because they haven't gone with him multiple innings very often, maybe a couple of times, but he could go too if you need him to. But I don't know. I think the best chance they if they can hang their hat on some of this guy Fried lined up for game five.
Yeah.
And he's been the best pitcher statistically in baseball since the All-Star break, but especially since the beginning of August.
Right.
He's been terrific.
Right.
So that's the best. I think they can plan on going home up 3-2, regardless of whether they lose tomorrow.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, because if they're going to have Enoa and Smiley handle the bulk, you kind of can't do, like, a line change where one of those guys comes in after one turn through. Like, they kind of both need to go a turn through the lineup, I think, just to keep the bullpen alive. Right?
And Smiley really struggles at after two turns through the lineup, maximum. Even when he was starting at the end, that's how he was going four innings most of the time. So, and he hasn't pitched in the postseason. I mean, Smiley, I don't know how they can expect him to go out there and be sharp.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't see good things from the bullpen game for the Braves. I just don't.
It's interesting. This has been I thought the Dodgers were going to win this pretty comfortably, but it's been a lot more interesting than that. And
It's been a good series.
It's good. It's
great,
like,
series.
I think the problem is that Atlanta has 88 next to their name. If it was 93,
and it sure could easily have been if they just started playing.
It's more fair to look at it in the context of, like, these are the same two teams that faced each other in the championship series last year, and it took it to seven games. Obviously, they're different teams, but they're still, like, neither side has changed enough to where, like, that calculus doesn't, like.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be as surprising to see one. Like,
it's
one team take.
I mean, Atlanta's offense last year was just a lot scarier.
Well, yeah.
Just a lot scarier with Acuña and Ozuna, you know. But It's a credit to Alex Anthopoulos for just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
In the way that he's often, you know, he's the joke of, among other, you know, execs in the game, is he's the guy who sends you an email at 3 a.m., you know, proposing some insane sort of deal. And that quality helped him basically dig the team out because he just got scooped up all the, like, two-win corner outfielders who were available.
He learned the depth, the value of depth when he was here, I think, because that's the most important thing to him is depth.
Yeah,
and he could never have enough depth for him. When he traded for four outfielders, we're like, four? What the fuck, man? He got one reliever. We're like, we thought you needed three relievers and maybe two outfielders. But it turns out he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
They still could have used another reliever. Rich Rodriguez looked great for a month, and then reality set in, and he was not even on the playoff roster.
Right. Fabian, any final thoughts heading into game four?
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what the offense looks like. Yeah. You sort of like, I think for the last 2 months, it's been a lot of searching for signs of, all right, this is the Dodgers offense we expected.
Yeah.
And I think you're sort of looking, obviously the eighth inning was a good burst, and it's sort of a little bit of what they can be, but also you're still looking at a lot of parts of this lineup to really start hitting. Both Justin and Trey Turner have been scuffling all postseason. You're still looking at a lineup that has been really inconsistent. I think this was only the third time all postseason they'd scored more than four runs in a game. Like, you're looking for this group to really collectively find itself. I think obviously a bullpen game is a good opportunity to do that. But I think you've seen this Dodgers team, like, sometimes they hit really good pitching and sometimes they struggle against the sort of matchups you expect them to hit well.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I think we'll see what it's like.
Yeah.
Kind of similar. The Braves have done some of their best offense against good pitching and played down to the level of competition. Obviously, there's not anything to play down to here. So I think Freddie going the other way twice was a big turn because, you know, they were going 0-for-8 with 7 strikeouts in the first two games.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if Duvall, he hasn't been really heard from the series. I mean, big way. He hasn't hit a home run. And he carried the offense for the first month he was with the team. So,
right.
I mean, the bullpen could give up 5 runs. They could still win.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to have to do a little more offensively than they have so far. They're going to be required to, with the pitching they're going to run out there. So I'm just curious if Snit at any point to get behind 2 or 3 runs will kind of wave a white flag and not use Matt Jackson and aim for. It hasn't been his MO, but I think maybe you have to be realistic and say we went get back to Atlanta up 3-2,
right.
And then you got we got Ian Anderson and you have Charlie Morton going in game 7.
Right.
You're going to get it there.
You got to win one. Yeah, makes
sense.
Well, guys, it was fun. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
And thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday for more baseball postseason coverage. You can download the Athletic Baseball Show episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.